Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History, Number 2. Selma Berkman and Estelle Kruman are interviewing Henrietta Chotiner on January 13, 1976.
Tape 2, side 3.
When did Dr. Solomon Abrams become executive director? You mentioned after his father.
Since we have had two educational directors since, I would say it's about 10 years. To be specific, I'd have to check with him.
And formerly, he was at the Beth Sholem in what?
Formerly, he
in
was.
In what capacity?
He was principal of the Hebrew school.
Now, you were saying this school, does it have any Sunday classes? Would that be considered Sunday school that day?
From the time that the school, the Hebrew Institute, moved to Squirrel Hill, they started innovating. And they felt that there might be some people who would like to come to classes on a Sunday morning, but would not want to come to Hebrew school for one reason or another. And so they felt that Sunday morning Bible and history classes would reach people that they hadn't reached before. And therefore, instead of having Hebrew on Sunday mornings, they put in English, which would be comparable to the Sunday school classes of the congregational school.
What now, age was this for?
The Sunday classes go all the way from kindergarten up until a few years ago through ninth grade. That was the grade I taught. And we had a graduation so that the young people whose parents weren't affiliated with a synagogue could feel that they were doing the same thing that their friends did who were confirmed. We had a graduation, we had a ceremony, the kids wore gowns, and there was a reception and a program, and everybody was happy. Not too long ago, the UJF, perhaps an austerity program, decided that the institutions to which they give allotments should not duplicate effort.
This is a beneficiary then of the
The Hebrew Institute is a beneficiary of the UJF. And since we had a School of Advanced Jewish Studies, and since our eighth and ninth grade were teenagers, that was duplication. So therefore, the Institute had to give up the eighth and ninth grades of Sunday school. As a result, a number of people said, if my child has to go to the sixth grade and then has to go someplace else for the seventh or the eighth, and let's say go here to the seventh and go someplace else for the eighth and ninth, I might just as well transfer my child to a Sunday school, start them straight through, let them go straight through and be confirmed. And that hurt our Sunday class.
Do you have a congregation?
We have a junior congregation. Children come Saturday morning to learn how to conduct services, to have children's services. There are two congregations that meet in our building, but they are not affiliated with the Hebrew Institute. They are two separate congregations.
Now, do you have bar mitzvahs here?
Yeah. The child can be bar mitzvah at our junior congregation. Mr. David Koss, one of our teachers, takes care of them. K-O-S-S. He takes care of them. If their parents are members of the Young People Synagogue, then they can have their bar mitzvah with the Young People Synagogue. If their parents are members of Dor Hadash, which is the Reconstructionist organization that meets in our building, they can have it there. Or they can have their bar mitzvah any place they want. May I ask, do you know what year you stopped the 8th and 9th grade? When that was? How long ago?
Let's see. I would say it must be about 7 years. I have to check with Dr. Abrams. Another innovation was the day camp. And we still have.
When did that
start? An afternoon day camp. Well, let's see, in back of you it says that 1975 was the 31st season.
So that's
so that means 44, you see, when we came to Squirrel Hill.
In other words, people can belong here, they pay a yearly dues. Is that so?
No, if children come here, you pay tuition.
Do you have services every Saturday morning?
There are children's services every Saturday while the school is in session.
It is mainly a school to teach Hebrew. It is not in place of a congregation.
No. We do not take the place of a congregation. We do not take the place of a public school. We do not take the place of any other school. We are trying to provide education for the unaffiliated, mostly.
Do you think, or how do you view that in the community now? Is it still as necessary as it once was?
I think that because of all the hullabaloo of integration and segregation and one thing and another, that the day school is going to be the coming thing, so that the children can get both the secular and the religious education that they need in the one group. And I think that's unfortunate. I personally do not approve of a parochial school. A parochial school in the sense, not Catholic,
right,
but a parochial school in the sense that you have a group of children learning both the public school and religious school.
Well, you're segregating yourself.
Yeah, because if you're talking about integration and lack of segregation, and we're going through all of this about busing, then what we're doing is a kind of segregation. I feel that you should go to school and be with everybody, since that's the society you have to live in and you have to work in. Then you have your own special group for your own special things.
We kind of skimmed over that group, but the Isaac Cedar Center connected with the Y, was that it?
Yeah.
Sussman was the director?
Yeah, they had educational courses.
What years were those?
It was after I graduated college. I really don't know. We'd probably have to ask Milton.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could ask Sharma Riverman. But they had all kinds of courses. Sam Rosenberg gave a course in painting and one thing. Mrs. Nachman, Gertrude Nachman, had something to do with arts and crafts. There were all kinds of courses. Some of the professors from Pitt gave history where it tied in with Jewish history. And I taught adult class in beginning Hebrew. Evelyn Engelberg was one of my students. Harriet Mallon was mm-hmm. one of my students.
And that went on for how many years?
I don't know exactly, but it would have to be before 1944.
And you taught
or
there.
Rather, because after the Institute moved here, I taught adult classes here for a while.
And for how many years did this continue?
Well, they have adult classes at the Institute now.
That you taught the...
Must be up and probably till around 45. Because when I came back from Columbus, it seems to me I didn't teach adult classes anymore. I don't remember.
Do you belong to any other organizations? maybe affiliated with your nationally or something, with Hebrew teachers of that sort? Or is there such
thing? I have a license from the National Board of License in New York to be a Hebrew teacher. That was granted me in 1951.
And that was from what?
The National Board of License of the Jewish Education Committee in New York, which is higher than a local licensing board.
Did you have to take a test for that?
I had to submit a almost like a dossier of all of everything, plus my credentials, write a piece in Hebrew, give them my experience. Part of it was experience, because up until then, Mr. Abrams had always said, being a graduate of the Hebrew, of the teacher's training school of the Hebrew Institute, which we do not have either, was enough.
Mm-hmm. You never went on for graduate work or anything
no,
like that?
No, because I would have liked to continue in Semitics, and I would have had to go either to Dropsy College or to Yale, and the financial situation was such that I couldn't do it. Besides the Hadassah class that was experimental, at one time they had release time courses in Pittsburgh. That was about the time of all this hullabaloo about church and state. And so one year, I don't remember now what year it was, but they decided that Protestant, Catholic, and Jewish children for 1 hour a week should go to the church of their choice or synagogue of their choice and learn a subject, a religious subject. And so let's say on Wednesday morning from 8:30 to 9:30, mm-hmm. I taught a course over at the B'nai Israel.
How would you say that teaching Hebrew is different insofar as the pronunciations that you did many years ago and now?
When I began, everything was what they called the Ashkenazic pronunciation, which is what is still used in most synagogues. After Israel became a state, they found that it was easier for the school to change to Sephardic than to try to change the Israelis. And now the emphasis is on speaking the way they do in Israel as near as possible. And that's why all these new programs with their tapes concentrate on trying to get the children to listen and repeat. Now, for instance, I can't roll an R. I can't in any language I've studied. I can't pronounce an L the way I should. And so if I went to Israel and opened my mouth, the first person that heard me would say, Amerikayet, an American, and then they'd talk English to me.
Mm-hmm. Have you been to Israel?
No. That's amazing, but true. I've worked in the office, and most of my vacation had been 2 weeks in the summertime. I can't stand heat. I didn't want to go when it was hot, and I didn't want to go for 2 weeks. 1 year after another went by, and I still haven't gotten there.
Well, I hope you do, because you of all people deserve to go.
The Israeli teachers that we have on our staff always express surprise when I tell them that all the Hebrew I know, I learned at the Hebrew Institute, because they don't know what it was like when we had a high school, when we had teachers training class, and that kind. I'm a graduate of the first graduating class of the Hebrew Institute, graduate of the first teachers training class of the Hebrew Institute.
When was that, the first teachers training class?
1926. There were three of us.
Who were the others, can you recall?
Anna Perlman.
Did she ever
She was a Hebrew teacher. I think if she's alive, she lives in New York State. The third one was Hadassah Rubin, who is the sister of Mrs. Bloomfield, who manages Max and Towers. Incidentally, Mrs. Bloomfield's father taught me Chumash.
Sister whom did you say?
Mrs. Bloomfield, the manager of Max and Towers. She died in Israel not too many years ago.
And as a result of working here, I guess you had little use for the Latin and the French that you studied.
Except to help the kids. And over the years, unfortunately, if you don't use it, you forget.
Mm. What about the Sephardic? Did you pick it up at all?
Yeah. When I came back from Columbus because supposedly there was a chance to teach Hebrew in the high schools. I went back to Pitt and took a course so that the University of Pittsburgh would submit my credentials to Harrisburg in order to have Hebrew added to whatever was on my teaching certificate. I gave a demonstration Hebrew lesson here to a member of the Board of Education. I gave a demonstration Hebrew lesson at Taylor Alderdice, where board members were present. I took the national teacher's exam. I took a Hebrew exam that was sent down from the high schools of New York. I went for an interview at the Board of Education. I got on the eligibility list. And then the Board of Education said that if the Jewish people in Pittsburgh would guarantee a registration for two classes at Taylor Alderdice and two classes at Peabody, I could have the position of Hebrew teacher. And unfortunately, two men in Pittsburgh who were heads of institutions had a falling out, and they wouldn't work for the project, and I didn't teach Hebrew in the high schools.
They wouldn't guarantee it then?
They wouldn't work to guarantee like 60 people at Taylor Alderdice so that at the end of the dropout, they would still have enough to have classes for 2 years.
So they never installed these classes at all?
Marcus Rosenthal, who had been connected with the Tree of Life, taught it for a year. But it wasn't, that was before I tried to get the regular class setting, and it wasn't successful.
What would you view some of the people and the organizations in the Pittsburgh community, their place as it was before and it is now? The changes that have taken place.
Well, you see, I can only think in terms of the older people that I knew and grew up with and worked with, and the majority of them are gone. And I don't know too much about the younger
setup.
Well,
I think what she means is how you would compare Pittsburgh today and years ago, socially, culturally, political.
It's altogether different when you think of my growing up in the atmosphere that was partly my grandmother, and that was partly what she brought from Europe. My brother, for instance, who is 8 years younger than I am, his children grow up in a Jewish home. They are members of a temple, but they don't know any Yiddish. They went to Sunday school enough to be confirmed in Bar Mitzvah. But I don't think there was the love that we had. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think there's a different atmosphere.
You mean more love for Jewish?
Jewish learning, everything Jewish. Now it's true. Now you see, the young people have switched. It's not so much Jewish that they love as Israel. And you have Habonim, and you have this organization. They're either going out for Soviet Jewry, or they're going out for Israel, or this. The Jewishness they take for granted. It's there.
How do you view all the accomplishments you've done in connection with this organization? Successes, failures.
Yeah.
I mean, you were in at the very beginning of this venture.
I go around telling my firsts, you know, like, besides being in, graduated the first classes, I was the first teacher to be called Teacher of the Year. A picture was taken at that
when was
one that? In May of 1970. Up until then, we'd always had a party honoring Teacher's Day. And that year, it was suggested, why not pick on a teacher? And so I was the first one. There were only three altogether. Now we're back to a board faculty dinner. And I liked the idea of being singled out because I felt, well, somebody appreciates what I did. Years ago, I heard a sentence which says, those who can, do. Those who can't, teach. And I've spent a great part of my life teaching. But then every once in a while, I see a former student of mine, and he comes back, and he'll say to me, remember me? I gave you a hard time, didn't I? Well, now I'm bringing my child to Hebrew school. Or someone will say to her mother, this is Miss Chotner. She taught me at Rhoda Shoal. I don't remember what she taught me. I just remember how hard she tried. Mm-hmm. And I think, well, all these years, maybe I did accomplish
right.
something.
I'm sure you did.
You must have, because we've heard about that.
Is there any other thing that you would like to cover in this interview that you think maybe we have missed in asking you about yourself or your family or the Hebrew Institute, your colleagues? Mm-hmm.
Since I've given up teaching Hebrew, I've taken up Braille.
Wow.
And I've been certified, and I'm connected with the Rhoda Shoal Braille Committee.
Were you taught there?
No.
No, she has learned Braille.
I learned there.
Where were you? You learned at
I took a
Rhoda
course.
Shoal.
I took a course under Marcia Gumberg in Braille, an 18-week course, and then I was certified in April of 72. And since then, I've been doing Braille work for, well, I did a book for the School for Blind. I've done some for the Library of Congress.
Do you do any, is there such a thing as in Hebrew?
I wrote to New York, to the Jewish Braille Institute. I contacted Ezri Uval when he was here at the community center, and I didn't get anywhere. There is a certain amount of Braille, and seemingly the Jewish Braille Institute talks about it, but I can't get anything to help me out. And Ezra said that he wasn't sure that the young people in Israel would be interested. They're lazy. They'd rather sit and listen to tapes. And so I've concentrated on the English, hoping that maybe someday I can do something.
Right, you would be a wonderful source for it.
Because that. I think that with my background
right.
and knowing Braille, the two would work
oh,
together.
Yes.
Rhoda Shoal gives a little charm after you have brailled 1,000 pages. So I've gone over 1,000 and I did get my little charm.
Oh, that's lovely. When did you get that?
I got that last October.
At 75.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice.
What in the 1,000 pages?
After one has brailled 1,000 pages.
Now, what did you do in those 1,000 pages? Do you remember what they were?
I did a book for the School for the Blind. I did two or three books for the Library of Congress. And right now, I'm on my second book for the library in Philadelphia.
What library? What type?
It's volunteers, I don't know what they call, Volunteers for the Blind and Handicapped Library Department in Philadelphia.
And what are the books that you're doing?
Well, for instance, the one that I did for the School for the Blind was about a seventh grade level biography of Booker T. Washington. Then I did a book called The Magic of Honey, in which someone had written all the places in the Bible and literature that honey is mentioned, all the things that you can use honey for, all the things that honey was supposed to do, and then recipes, making all kinds of honey cake. I did a novel called My Brother John,
a Western type of novel where this itinerant preacher was involved in all kinds of things. Then I did two books of Henry James, The Aspern Papers and The Spoils of Poynton, and that was hard. The first one I did for Philadelphia was called Myths of the Space Age, and it was all about ESP, about magicians, everything to do with the occult, and it ended up with Everybody Discovered America, all the way back to ancient times, about all the people that had something to do.
It's right very commendable that you...
Right now, I'm finishing a book that someone else started called The Naive and Sentimental Lover by John le Carré. And when I heard the name, I thought that it was going to be a spy story, because John le Carré wrote The Spy Who Came in from the Cold. Much to my surprise, it's what I would call an X-rated book.
Is that the one for Philadelphia?
Yeah, I'm doing the second half. I don't know whether the person who did the first half quit because of the X rating or because had something else to do, but I'm getting a wonderful education.
Have you enjoyed the books you're doing otherwise?
Yes, I guess it's my teaching background. I enjoy doing something useful. Mm. I would prefer doing something more than just writing four-letter words, however.
Well, it's been a great morning interviewing you, and if you have any other questions or something you might like to add to this.
The only thing I can think of is if you want anything that has to do with the actual dates of the Institute, that we could find in the library scrapbook or from Dr. Abrams.
Mm-hmm. And before closing, you mentioned Mr. Rosenblum. Charles Rosenblum, what connection did he have?
Charles Rosenblum's father, Saul Rosenblum, was a contributor to the Institute for many years. And when he died, Charles Rosenblum became president. And he was president and a contributor for many years. And we have the Saul Rosenblum Library, and we have contributions of all kinds from the Rosenblums. Mr. Finkel was president. Frankel was president.
Who is president now?
Herman Forman, a student of mine, believe it or not. A Hebrew student of mine. Herman L. Forman, an attorney. Now, I still have a couple of students on the board.
Oh, very nice. Lots of good old friends.
And on your way out, if you look at the walls downstairs, you'll see lots of pictures of olden days and probably see some of me in various stages.
You did mention that.
You mentioned Elliot Finkel and Bob Frankel as presidents.
Former president. Jerome Rosenberg.
Them?
No, I never taught them. They're closer to my age. Jerome Rosenberg, head of the one of the departments in the college. And
was
Pitt,
he was
a former president. No, the present president is the one I taught.
Well, thank you. I think we're almost at the end, but this has been very, very good. We enjoyed it. I hope you did, too.
Yeah, I don't know whether this is the kind of stuff that I want to give to posterity. It's been lots of fun.
It's been good.
Yeah, but it's the story of you and the Hebrew Institute, and that's what is important for other people to remember, and to, if they had a question, to turn on the tape and find out about what you have done.